today we have got the Rank family. We've got three generations of Ranks today, and so I'm really excited to talk to them a few minutes. And so we've got Bill, Brian, and Thomas. And Bill, I want to start with you a little bit. We talked the other day. Let's make sure we're on here. All right. Hold it all the way up there. We talked the other day a little bit about you grew up in a military family, right? Tell us a little bit about what that was like.
Terrible. I did grow up in a, my father was a career Army officer, West Point, general, the whole nine yards, and it was a little rough. He was not a Christian. In fact, I don't remember a single time that we ever went to church together. My mother, if you could call it, was the head of the family in a Christian sense. But we didn't go to church with her either. All she did was drive us to my sister and I to Sunday school every morning. But she was pretty faithful about that. The first time I can even remember I guess you call it religious training or anything like that, was when I was about 10 years old. We were on an Army post in all places, Tokyo, Japan. And we had I went to a Sunday school for the first time. I think I was in the fourth or fifth grade or whatever. Mm-hmm. And we had a young naval officer, aviator, who was our teacher. Chris, they call those Airedales, I think. Is that a familiar term? And he was, we were, all the young boys really were crazy about him, and he was our introduction, many of us. We had to memorize a lot of things, and one of my assignments was the Beatitudes, which I couldn't say a word today. But if we could say it perfectly, we got a set of gold wings, aviator wings, that they wear on their uniform. And I wanted those wings badly. So I memorized the Beatitudes, and enough of that.
And you became a Christian as an adult, right?
Yes, I was about 36 years old. I'm going to get to there as quick as I can. But I want everybody to know what a tortured path it was. So we moved every year. In 18 years of my life, we moved 12 or 13 times, almost every year. And a couple of years later, we were in Governor's Island, which is a little right at the tip of Manhattan. There was an Episcopal church that had been on the island for years. So my mother thought it'd be a good idea that I'd get active at that church. And I became an acolyte. And I know that's not in all religions, all services, but you know, it's the white robe and the crucifix and the whole, all that stuff. What's that? Well, anyway, I did that, and then we were confirmed. This is kind of an interesting thing in Trinity Church, which is the little church that's been in Lower Manhattan near the 9/11 towers. It's been there for years. I mean, for 200 and some odd years. Alexander Hamilton is buried in the churchyard, and we were confirmed there. And then we lived a couple other places, and not much happened. Many times on Army posts, they either had a non-denominational chapel or no chapel, and or many times we just knew we were only going to be there for a year, so we didn't become affiliated with any church. So, we would just not do anything, which I don't know why. Fast forward that to high school, nothing. We lived at Atlanta General Depot. We moved to Georgia when I was 16. And there were no chapels on the post, and so we just didn't do anything. I went to Georgia Tech. I was supposed to go to West Point, but that's I'm not going to get into that. Went to Georgia Tech, and
sure you didn't find God at Georgia Tech.
They had this thing. I was still considered Episcopalian, sometimes known as Whiskeypalians, and I was still considered Episcopalian. There was a church near the campus that a lot of Agnes Scott girls would come to on Sunday evenings. And so I did go to those every now and then. And that was my closest thing to any religious affiliation at Georgia Tech for 4 years. But I'm going to make this, I'm going to shorten this up as quick as I can. Trish and I were married when I was 35 years old. And 1 year later, he had just been born. We decided to become affiliated with a church. She grew up a Baptist, and I wasn't sure I was comfortable in the Baptist church. So it took a lot of soul searching to do this, but we finally went and spoke to the pastor, and this was what I say
at Second Ponce,
and this was Russell Dilday. This was in the 70s. I don't know whether any of y'all ever went to remember Russell Dilday at Second Ponce or not, but he was a great person to me. He opened my eyes to so many things. He first explained to me how the husband was the head of the house in spiritual matters. And I had never heard that before. In fact, I'm ashamed to say I challenged him to show me in the Bible where it said that. And he did. So he took me on as his project. First he said, "When you're comfortable, I want to baptize you." And I said, I wasn't sure how I felt about that, but we finally did. And then the greatest thing was, he said, "Why don't you just come by my office every, couple times a month, and let's just chat about different things." I couldn't believe it. But he was a great person, and I loved him dearly. Mm. And I was determined that I was not going to be like my father when our children were born. Mm. And so Brian and his sister, Courtney, if they woke up on Sundays and said, "I don't feel good, Dad, I think I'm not going to go to church," that was totally unacceptable. They'd have to be on their deathbed to miss church. So that's enough right now. I'm going to pass the mic to somebody else.
Thanks, Bill. Now, Brian, you had a little bit of a different upbringing in terms of faith. Tell me what it was like living with your dad and live with your dad and how faith played a role in your life early on.
He wasn't kidding about no excuses for church. I mean, I was thankful to have grown up in the church. But I will say candidly, when I got to college, I looked for an opportunity for myself to make my own decisions, and unfortunately, I got away from that process. By God's grace, several of my friends, by the time we were around seniors, kind of shared with each other that we had grown up in the church but had gotten away from it, and so we started doing our own Bible studies together. And I'm sure there are pastors that would just cringe at like the realizations that we came to as we're reading stuff. But at the end of the day, it was a good process because we did it on our own, right? And we got back into the Word, and we, and candidly, probably poked a lot of holes in it, which was also a good process, right? If you ever read The Case for Christ, like we were skeptics as college students, even though this is how we've been raised, but it brought us all together very close. And one of the good college friends to this day is still a friend, and he's Thomas's godfather. Because you know, we all came back to Christ together after college.
Yeah, that's awesome. Now I know, Bill, that a real estate friend of yours introduced you to Friday Morning Men's Fellowship. Is that right?
Yes.
And so you started coming a long time.
1989. That was 35 years ago. Is that right? Jerry Massara was the fellow. I'm seen him in years. I don't even know whether he's still alive or not, but he was sharing office space with me, and he mentioned this, and I said I'd never heard anything like this. But what intrigued me, Chris, to your wisdom, was the word leadership and leadership ministries, because I had grown up not knowing anything about leadership. It wasn't until I went in the Army as an officer where that was all they preached and all they talked about. And I saw the difference between leadership and no leadership firsthand. So the fact that this was something called Leadership Ministries really intrigued me. And so I went. And I guess I've been here ever since.
Now, Brian, what was your introduction to leadership ministries in Friday Morning?
So my father would bring me as a guest. I've been to Bennigan's over by Lenox, and then the one on Peachtree, and visit some at On the Border. And then what happened was I got married, and my wife already had a daughter. And so I went overnight from single young man in Atlanta, working in finance, to married and being a father, just like that. And I remember my dad, I'm paraphrasing here, but basically said, your life has become very serious, and you owe it to yourself to take it seriously, and you should come to Friday Morning. And so I did, and at the time we're meeting on the border, and if you were, I'm sure I'm exaggerating, but if you were like under the age of 40 or at least 35, I mean, you were the minority there. And myself and Christopher White and Colin White and Alec Dix, and I'm trying to remember who else was there. I mean, we were the young man's table. And we just figured it out and did fellowship there together, which was great. And what's amazing is that we each lead tables now, right? So, I mean, that is the model of discipleship.
Awesome. All right, now Thomas, you're third generation. So we talked a little bit, you said that your experience in faith was a little softer, a little gentler. Tell me a little bit about how you began sort of a faith journey.
Yeah, so I don't think there was ever like a certain time I could pinpoint coming to faith, but I mean, like a lot of families, I would imagine in Metro and North Atlanta, I just grew up going to church every week, did the youth church retreats, started going to a Christian school and starting sixth grade. And so I never felt like anything was ever forced upon me. I just constantly felt surrounded by every resource I needed and just constantly being educated, which I feel like ended up being much softer.
Yeah. Yeah, that's awesome. I should also mention you're at Auburn.
Yes.
Now, greatest school in the country. I don't know how we had two Auburn students, just happened to be up here, but, you know, it is what it is, War Eagle. So I asked you to describe your dad, and you use words like outgoing, kind. Tell me a little bit about how that's influenced you.
Yeah, I wouldn't say I'm the most outgoing person. So having my father that isn't scared of any conversation, isn't scared of talking to strangers, is something I look up to for sure. And so I'd say the biggest thing I'm trying to emulate in my life would be his ability to strike up conversation with anyone, and whether it just be a hi, good morning to the person at the front of the building, or how are you to the waiter, waitress at a restaurant, you never know how much that impacts the person you're talking to, even though it barely costs you anything, if anything.
Man, that's a good word. Now, Brian, I ask you to describe your dad, and what are some of the words that you used?
When I think of my dad, excuse me, I think of he's hardworking, and he is persistent, and he taught me like the value of never giving up, right? That you don't ever quit the fight, which was candidly important at Georgia Tech because you wanted to quit at times. Everybody calls your graduation day, like, when did you get out? And then, you know, I would say, like, you know, growing up, as anybody can imagine, like, life in a real estate family is high highs and low lows. And one day there's lots of great deals, the next day there's not. But I admire my father because I witnessed him, like, persevering through every type of economic cycle and never giving up. And, you know, candidly, I can say it now, I appreciate the fact that he was as forceful as a child and didn't give in to, you know, the easy out of, oh, we can just sleep in this Sunday. We don't have to go to church.
Bill, I ask you to describe Brian a little bit, and I was intrigued that you said that he's a fantastic leader in every respect. It warmed me to hear you talk about him a little bit as a person, as a leader. What would you say about Brian?
Well, he's a great leader, and much to my surprise, because his leadership abilities didn't show up to me until he was in his early 20s. But I'm happy, whatever caused it or however it came about, I'm delighted that he is taking a leadership role in everything he does. And I mean church, leadership ministries. He's on some boards of charity boards and been active in his church on finance committee and what have you. And he's just, and I'm a strong believer in leadership. As a little side note, it wasn't until about 20 years ago that colleges that had MBA programs even had leadership as part of their curriculum. So I'm a strong believer in what a strong leader can do and what a weak leader can't do. Yeah. It's evident in our politics today. So that's all I'm going to say on that.
Well, I love the story here of how each of you came to faith in a different way and how the idea of a men's fellowship or being a part of a group in each of your cases made a difference in your lives. So let me pray for you guys real quick, and I appreciate y'all being here this morning. Father, I thank you for the gift of fatherhood, and I thank you for the gift of mentoring. And I thank you that you sent us a divine mentor in Jesus Christ to show us how to live, how to interact with one another, how to be faithful, and how to have a relationship with you. And so I just want to pray for the Rank family right now. I want to thank you for them and their involvement in Friday Morning Men's Fellowship. And I want to thank you for infusing each of them with your Holy Spirit and allowing them to influence one another as well as others toward Christ. I pray that you'll continue to bless their family and see them through these years of life and marriage and all the things, college, all the things that that we do on a daily basis. But more than anything, give them opportunities to use their faith and witness in a way that glorifies and honors you. And I pray all of this in your name. Amen.